All right. Hello, and welcome to the third of three exciting NABBW teleseminars we're hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce today's guest, Margaret Mae Damon, but first let me introduce myself and do a bit of housekeeping. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found online at www.nabbw.com, and we also have a wonderful forum at www.boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords Baby Boomer Women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, and I know that a number of you on the call are not, you are welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW website, which you can use to join. This teleseminar is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have approximately 70 past teleseminars, which we've recorded and are available both by audio recording and transcript on the website in the members area. Well, enough of my commercial here. Let me tell you a little bit about the format of the call today. I will be introducing our guest in a moment, and we will spend about 30 minutes discussing how baby boomer women are changing the world and themselves for the better through philanthropic expression. After that, we'll open the call to your questions. So without further delay, let me introduce today's guest, and we'll launch right into our discussion. Margaret Mae Damon is co-author with Nikki Nicastro-McCutcheon of the book Women, Wealth, and Giving, The Virtuous Legacy of the Boom Generation. And our topic today is how to transform your world, deed by deed, the Boomer way. Margaret is extremely well qualified to provide us with this presentation. She is founder and president of the Institute for Women and Wealth in Lake Worth, Florida, which provides a forum for women to recognize and fulfill their abundant wealth legacy of values and valuables. She is the planned giving consultant for the Kravis Center of the Performing Arts in West Palm Beach, Florida, a strategic leadership consultant for the United Way of Mountie Foundation, Stuart, Florida, and serves as a member of the Executive Committee of the National Board of the Partnership for Philanthropic Planning in Indianapolis, Indiana. A graduate of Boston University, Margaret's 40-year career in education, financial planning, fundraising, and philanthropic consulting began there and included 18 years with American Express Financial Advisors as a senior financial advisor, where she specialized in philanthropic estate planning for women. She is a frequent keynote speaker and workshop leader on topics of money, wealth, and women's legacy. As a recognized thought leader and change maker, she has presented papers at the national conferences of the Partnership for Philanthropic Planning, the International Association of Professional Fundraisers, and the Association of Healthcare Philanthropic Professionals. Finally, Margaret is a member of the Sigma Alpha Iota National Music Fraternity and a classical flutist. She resides on Florida's Treasure Coast with her husband, Gary, and three cats. Welcome, Margaret.
Well, thank you so much, Anne. It's a delight to be here, delight to talk about a subject that I'm passionate about and that I'm finding so many other women around the country are making a priority and becoming so much more discerning in how they think about what their life is and what their legacy will be.
Absolutely, I agree on that. I think that as we age, our legacy is something that it's something that we can no longer think that we'll deal with that later. It's something that we're becoming passionate about doing something about it right now. Now, Margaret, I know that one of your favorite quotes is from Eleanor Roosevelt, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." And I like Eleanor Roosevelt's quotes, too. One of my favorites that guides my life is, when you cease to make a contribution, you begin to die. And I think in a way that those two are complementary quotes. And yet you have a quote of your own that I either found in the book or in some of the other material that you sent me that I really liked. Find your passion and focus your gifts of time, talent, and money. So given that thought, I'd like to begin by asking you to define the term philanthropist and discuss how and why every woman can be one.
Thank you, Anne. Yes, it is my experiences, and of course I love both of those quotes. I believe that many of us have unfulfilled dreams, especially boomer women from the 60s and 70s, where we actually, you know, started the consciousness revolution and all of the other areas that we had to rewrite the rules because there were none for us. We couldn't follow what our mothers and our grandmothers had done. We were on a different journey, a different path.
Right.
But that those dreams, you know, which maybe were suspended as we climbed the corporate ladder or we had our families, we've come around now to look at what is it that really we want to make as our destiny. What are those unfulfilled dreams that Eleanor Roosevelt's quote reminds me of? Where is that beauty, and how do we continue so we don't cease to make a difference? So when I look at philanthropy, and when I talk to women around the country, the first thing they ask me is they say, but I don't have any money. I cannot be a philanthropist. And I say to them, well, have you bought Girl Scout cookies? Do you volunteer at the Council for the Aging? Do you take some time to work at the United Way? Are you a volunteer at the school that your grandchildren are at? And do you look at your neighbor and believe in the golden rule? And so what I say and what I believe and what I practice and what I see so many other women starting to believe and practice is that every woman is a philanthropist because the true meaning of the word philanthropy is the love of humankind. And we all have that in our heart, and especially women who are nurturing and who have the compassion and the caring to want to see a better community. So first thing I say is, you are a philanthropist if you believe in the love of humankind.
Okay, excellent. I think that is very inclusive for those of us who might have thought, as you said, you know, I don't have money, I can't contribute. You clearly pointed out that the meaning of philanthropy is not one-sided only in the terms of leaving a monetary donation. But now, as I was going through the book, I noticed that you make a point of striving to help women achieve a better understanding of the financial, emotional, spiritual, and psychological influences that guide our lives in order to help us create both public and private legacies that are focused or tied to our unique hopes and dreams and aspirations. Now, I haven't worked a lot with financial planners of my own, although I'm always talking to my mother about the financial planners that she's working with, and I know I will be for my legacy is what I mean. I know that is coming soon. I believe it's got to be soon. But I suspect that when I hear her talk about the financial planners that she works with, I don't think that they have that type of an approach to legacy giving. So I thought perhaps that's what your Institute for Women and Wealth is all about, and therefore I'd love it if you could tell me a little bit more about that and how you came to found it.
I came to found that. It's a very good question, Anne. I came to create it in 2000, and it came out of my experiences as a financial advisor, seeing exactly what you just said, that most of the financial planners that were working with both men and women, with families, were not addressing the values side. They were addressing the valuables that the clients had, and looking how to work with the assets, but they left the on the table, or they didn't even think about talking about what is it that you want to pass on as your traditions, as your values. How do you feel about what your children will inherit? Will there be too much money, too little money, but will they be able to follow in some of the values and the traditions that you were brought up with, that you brought them up with? Because most of the time, if you think about it, many of us as women learned where the first part of our financial planning was sitting at the kitchen table. I don't know about you, but I remember sitting at that kitchen table with my folks and my grandparents on Sundays, and we'd talk about the community, talk about our neighbors. We'd come home from church, and we would, if there was someone that was hurting or something that needed to be done, that's where we first learned where we could give as well as receive. And so the emotional and the values were put into us in childhood, that it was always part of, you know, when you have an allowance, we would get three parts. One would go for savings. One would go to buy whatever we wanted, and then you could still get penny candy at the candy store. That's
right,
so I'm showing you my age
in
a bit.
If you got a dime like me for your first allowance, you know, that you could still get something with that penny candy part.
Oh, it was wonderful. And we even had little cork stores at our corner. I grew up in Albany, New York, and we used to go down there and get a cork because we had those little cork guns that we used to play play in the play yard with. But that's getting off subject. But the third part of that allowance was always to be able to give something. We put it away so that we would be able to give to something we believed in. And for me, growing up, it was always animals. I love kitty cats. And I was always going down to the local Humane Society and bringing, one of my little blankets or a towel or a couple cents to help the beautiful little animals that were there. So early on, we learned that, you gave part of what you had. And I've grown up with that, and I, as being one of the first in my family to go to college, I believe very strongly in giving back because education is how we all move forward in our financial life and also to develop more of an understanding of who we are, what we want to do, and how we can give back. So the book does talk about the financial part, but it also has the emotional and the spiritual and the psychological that my forums through the Institute have brought many women and men together to talk about what was taboo. If you think about it, when we were growing up, you couldn't talk about sex, couldn't talk about politics, and you certainly couldn't talk about money.
That's right.
And so those psychological barriers are carried with us as we grew up and as we became adults, and now as many of us, and a lot of the work that I've done is based on Margaret Mead and Carl Jung. So there are two items in the book that I really expand on. One, of course, is many of us have that zest that Margaret Mead talks about in terms of our postmenopausal zest, and we want really to do something that is going to leave an indelible legacy of those values and valuables. So we have the zest, and we also have what Carl Jung says. We have the question is taking off that mask and who we really are, and we really are empowered enough within ourselves to go ahead maybe against the current and to do things that 20 years ago we wouldn't do or couldn't do, but to make a difference in our community. So going back to what we talked about earlier about philanthropy and what the terminology means, I would say every woman is a philanthropist through what I call the three principles of abundance. Now, I know a lot of us look at the glass half full, but if we look at it half empty, then we're looking about those things in our life that are not sustainable or those things that are scarcity. And that is not what I believe in. I believe in abundance and that the energy that all of us have, it can be in terms of money, time, talent, but that energy we are stewards of. And we are stewards of it during our lifetime, and we're passing through, and it's passing through us to be for the better of the common good and the better of humanity. So every woman is a philanthropist. We have the abundance of our time, talent, and treasure. Every woman can make a difference, whether it's a dollar or millions of dollars, and every woman has a story. And don't we love all to tell stories and to listen to other women's stories? And that's how we connect.
Absolutely. I have a good friend who is fanatical about telling people that the best way to communicate in your writing is to be able to tell stories. And she seems to think that it's, you know, probably ingrained in us from primal times or something, this love of story. So I think that's important that we recognize. And so I think what you're saying is through our what's important to us in our story might impact on where we choose to spend our time, talent, and treasure.
So right. And you're so right on when you say that. I find that if once women focus and men too, but primarily women, because this is our time. This is the decade for women as philanthropists as we go forward. I think this all started around 2006 when we finally came to focus on the tipping point, as I say. Three things happened in 1 week in history that made me aware, and many of us that are in our 50s and 60s that are have that postmenopausal zest, the leading edge of the boomers. In 1 week, we lost three of the major icons in women's history. We lost Coretta Scott King in end of January of 2006 from civil rights. We lost Wendy Wasserstein, who wrote Heidi's Chronicles and was a spokeswoman for women of our generation and the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright. And we lost Betty Friedan from the generation before for the feminine mystique. 1 week, all three died. And if that was the tipping point, it said to me and to others, my heavens, we better get moving in the direction of what we want to see in this world, how we want to make a difference before it's too late, and bring with us that idealism and that destiny that the boom generation is known for.
All right. I'm trying to think whether I should think that they're doing something amazing up in heaven or whether I don't really think that there is a heaven and they've moved on to have their essences be in other places. But I think
maybe they've come back around reincarnated.
Right.
But no matter what, the spirit is with us.
Absolutely. Now, you've said that every woman can be a philanthropist, and in the book you talk about being a virtuous philanthropist. I'd like it if you would tell us a little bit more about what you mean by a virtuous philanthropist.
What I mean by a virtuous philanthropist is that from looking at where history is right now and in the cycle of history that we are, I believe we are in the winter of our discontent, and there's very little virtue in the world. And virtue needs to come back in vogue if we are going to create a new spirit in America. And if women are going to lead, in many cases, from the social, civic side, the philanthropic side, lead in solutions and not just the status quo. And so they're even going to lead government and lead corporate life through what they're doing on the social side, which was our badge of citizenship way back from Jane Addams and from the progressive era, before we could vote and before we could actually have money in our own name.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at how in this last 60 years or so, from 1946, when the boom generation started, when we were born, those first 20 years, if you think of from 1946 to today, to 2010, that we have four seasons, four turnings, and each one is about 20, 25 years. We started with a high in those first 20 years. Levittown, all the things that happened after World War II, we were a great power. And so that I would call the spring. And then we went into our summer, which was our awakening during the civic times with the feminist movement and all the other things that happened then, and civil rights in the 60s and the 70s. That's when we were in our teenagers and also into college. And then we went into our unraveling, or what I call the autumn, in the 70s through the 90s with the polarization, with more people, the morals of our society coming apart. And so now we are in the winter, where we can have an opportunity to make a new spring. Because if you think about it, the seasons have always come and followed each other's, whether as a musician it's from, you know, Gustav Holst the seasons or Handel's the seasons, whatever. But the seasons are there, and so another spring is going to arrive. Who better to lead that than the women's boom generation woman as she looks forward to what her destiny is going to be? So going full circle to answer that question in a very long way, is that we perhaps, 4 out of 5 people in some of the surveys say the morals and the ethics in this country are going down the tubes or are no longer pointing straight north. So how do we get the compass back pointing north? And the 7 covenants of a virtuous philanthropist that I recommend we all practice come 4 from Aristotle and 3 from the Bible. Basically, it's one of the handouts that we have for our listeners on the show tonight, but I'm going to briefly go through them. It's It's what I call a voluntary philanthropist is one who is empowered by the three principles of abundance, which we talked about briefly, three principles of abundance being everyone is a philanthropist, makes a difference, and has a legacy. But then they live a harmonious life following their hopes, dreams, and aspirations for a greater good of humanity by being the four, from Aristotle, the four virtues. Number one being courage, the ability to sustain a steadfast pursuit of one's conviction when there's skepticism around there and discouragement, as we know. There's justice, the second virtue. For a virtuous philanthropist, that's the respect and to treat other people as moral equals, especially in this world where there's inequity of power and of opportunity, as many of us women have experienced. Do you agree with those two, Anne?
Absolutely.
And then the other two are prudence. For a virtuous philanthropy, it's our ability to judge wisely and objectively pertaining to how we use our time, talent, and treasure. And I can come back to that because we are could be an involuntary philanthropist, we all are, or a voluntary philanthropist. And that's very important for the women who want to focus on their passion and their purpose and their power. Back to that in a moment. But so far we've got courage, justice, and prudence, three of Aristotle's virtues. The fourth one I've chosen is temperance. And when you think of temperance as a virtuous philanthropist and how we live a harmonious life, it's our ability to exhibit a discipline in all matters, that we avoid the extremes on both sides and not to be harmful in our thought or our action. So those are the four from Aristotle, the courage, the justice, the prudence, and the temperance. And the three from the Bible, of course, are faith, hope, and love. And I have chosen to say that for faith, a virtuous philanthropist is our ability to trust the expectation of right that will be accomplished without prior proof. In other words, we have to have that faith that we are doing things that will be good and there will be a good outcome for the common good of all. Hope for a virtuous philanthropist is our ability to accept the risk and risk with reasonable optimism. Again, the glass is half full. We are abundant. Reasonable optimism for good to be achievable, even though many of us see what's happened in today's world, but good can be achievable, our hope. And love, of course, the greatest of all, is the ability to act beneficently and rejoice and celebrate in the happiness of others. So those are the seven covenants of a virtuous philanthropist that I talk about in the book. And we're living our life with those covenants, then we are showing a way where there's almost a light, an energy, a feeling that we are making a difference in the world.
All right. Very, very clear there. That really, I think, shines that light to help make it clear for us which direction that we should be going. Do you have advice that you would give to us boom generation women in order to live a purposeful life that would involve these, utilizing these points of the covenants that you just discussed?
Yes, I do. And in speaking and sharing this message around the country, I have learned from other women how they are living their purposeful life. And that, I think, is the most important aspect of all of this work that I'm doing, is that I'm learning from others. I'm seeing a lot of women think outside the box, and I'm seeing a lot of women giving themselves the permission to demonstrate their passion, to not be afraid of it anymore, to speak female, to be able to communicate in a strong way, but without being aggressive about it, what their true belief is and what they're caring for and how they want to make a difference. So they're connecting their passion to what they see the needs are in the community that they feel strongly about. So they're giving themselves permission for their purpose, for their focus. They are voluntary philanthropists, because then they are also living a purposeful life. So that what I call that is the cycle, the empowerment cycle. We're empowering ourselves. We identify our passion with those values we believe are very strong that we've had from childhood. We want to see them in the community, so we have the purpose that we connect to the issues, whether it be health, whether it be for the animals, whether it be for the environment, whether it be for any of the areas that we care about. We're connecting our passion with a purpose, which then we impact in a strategic way a portion of our community. A voluntary philanthropist knows how to say no. That's very hard for many women. A voluntary philanthropist knows how to say yes because they've connected the dots in this empowerment cycle, that they've connected their passion to their purpose, to the power that they can then give themselves permission to go ahead and write a bigger check, spend more time, or look at ways their talent can be used more productively in the community. That's what a voluntary philanthropist does. If we're involuntary, guess who is our best uncle? Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam, I was going to ask.
Yes.
Uncle Sam,
because he will inherit, if we don't tell by our will, and the latest statistics are that many men and women start doing their first will in their 40s or 50s, and normally it's around some life change, whether it's children, whether it's travel, whether it's divorce, whether it's marriage. But if we don't do a will, then whose will is done? It'll be the will of the state that we're living in the community, depending where the law is, and it'll be the will of Uncle Sam, and whatever we have of our values or our valuables won't go where we want it to do the most work, won't connect with our life, and won't be our legacy. So when we're talking to our financial planners, earlier I said about values, and you talked about stories that we can tell them. I think if we're working with a financial planner and they don't ask us what our stories are or what our dreams are or how we feel, then we either have to coach them to do that or find another financial planner that has the holistic approach to values and valuables.
Well, as you've been talking here, I'm not quite sure. It's not on my list of questions that I intended to ask you, but I'm finding myself wondering, do you see that out of a catastrophe, say like the oil spill, do you think that even though BP is supposed to be taking care of that, do you think that we will see some kind of women-led philanthropic effort that's going to come out of that to try to make things better there?
Oh, yes. In fact, we're already seeing several. The environment, of course, all across the board is very important to women. A wonderful group in California that was led by Tracy Gehry, who's an outstanding philanthropist and has started one of the best resources in the area called Inspired Legacies, and they have a website. She went together, brought together some other women, and they actually saved a sequoia forest of redwoods in California. And there are women gathering together around saving the environment with BP. There was just a editorial in the newspapers today about, and I must say I don't have it with me, a woman who was actually starting an initiative in this area, an environmental initiative. So women are seizing the moment. It would be interesting that I'm sure many of our callers and listeners tonight know about the Women's Funding Network. Here is a group of 180, I believe now, women's funds around the world. And they have just finished, under the leadership of Helen Lacay Hunt and Swanee Hunt and several others, a drive to raise over $180 million within 2 years, for women's and girls' issues around the world, so that there are groups all over the world, from the Women's Funding Network, the Global Women's Fund, that are looking for ways to help women and girls, help the environment and education and all of those areas that we believe in so strongly. We have gathered together. Interestingly enough, in the Women's Funding Network, many of the gifts were stretch gifts. And what I mean by that is they were not just a checkbook gift that many of us started out doing, writing checks here, checks there, checks everywhere, but they were stretch gifts in terms of pledges. There were 40 women that pledged $1 million each. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know they could do it, but they heard other women tell inspiring stories about how they wanted to make a difference in the world over a period of time. And they made the pledges for $1 million or more for Women's Funding Network. So there are communities all around that women are joining in to be voluntary philanthropists, to connect that passion and that purpose and give their permission. Yes, I think out of adversity of this winter of our discontent, if we truly believe that philanthropy, and this was a quote by Robert Payton, who started the Center for Philanthropy at Indiana University in Indianapolis, said, what better purpose of philanthropy than to be the steward of the ethics and the morals of our society? And so if we've thought they've gone south and they're not, the compass is not facing north, then women are banding together to bring back some of the ethics, the values, the virtue into our society, to recreate community, whatever that community definition will be from the grassroots up in that community where these women live, where we all live, that we see the need and we see where we can make the difference.
All right. Very, very good to know that. Now, are there some resources that you would point us toward for if we are, as women, want to become more strategic in our giving?
Oh, yes, yes. And and this is the most wonderful part, that in the last 10 years, there has come to be many, many different networks. I will just name a few, but between our social network connecting, the one that comes to mind right away was the one I just spoke about, Tracy Gehry and Inspired Legacies. Inspired Legacies, Tracy has written the Bible, the book about how women and men can live their legacy. It's a workbook. It's available on Amazon, and she also has a wonderful website, Inspired Legacies. There's
okay.
A new one. It's not new, but since Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have said, you know, we're going to come forward with 50%, we want pledges from the billionaires to either leave now or at their death. Boulder Giving, www.boulder, B-O-L-D-E-R, Giving, has wonderful online tools for women to use to be able to develop their giving plan. And there's an enormous amount of work going on with Boulder Giving. In fact, the Gates Foundation just gave Boulder Giving almost $500,000 over the next 3 years to help develop giving ideas for people like us that are not the billionaires, but still give in a way to make us philanthropists, because it's not how much we give, but it's how we give what we have. So those two are wonderful, wonderful sites. I also wanted to, for those of us that are in California, I just received some information from a woman that is working with the Comprehensive Advisors in Philanthropy Program about an initiative that the state of California is doing. The state of California legislature has declared October as Plan Your Giving Day. And they're going to focus, and Elfrida Ford at EFOORD at AOL.com is leading that initiative to get over the next 5 years at least 3,000 people making pledges statewide in California to leave 10% of their estate as a legacy. And they also have another website called www.givingpledge.org. So it's happening in California, and you know, once it starts in California, you know where it comes. It comes east.
Mm-hmm. Comes east.
Comes east. Now, so those three sources, and my, of course, my website is a resource because it has a list of all these resources on it, and also in the book, the Institute for Women and Wealth, .org, and also I think that was put up on the website, and also the Women's Funding Network, WFN. .org, wonderful sites for resources for all of us at any giving level whatsoever.
Okay. Now, there was another site that you were just sending me an email about earlier today that I haven't had a chance to really investigate. Would that fit into here? It was Vivanista.com?
Vivanista, yes. Vivanista pulls together many of the bloggers from the different areas of philanthropy and also from other areas of women's life. And it's a new site that has come up recently, and it's a very, I think it's going to be a very important one as the social networking started. And, of course, there's some great bloggers out there, too, that are dealing in the philanthropic. I would suggest that even Google, there is a, if women want to look at what's happening around the country and the world, there is, I think it's Women and Philanthropy is one of the Google Google sites that comes up. I also, in thinking about this, there was another area that that had some women's information on it, and I think that one could look at the Women's Philanthropy Institute or women at the Center for Philanthropy in Indianapolis, WPI. It was started by two extraordinary women, Sandra Shaw Hardy and Martha Taylor, many years ago in Wisconsin. It has now been moved to the Center for Philanthropy. It's the Women's Philanthropic Institute, and they're doing some great symposiums. One is in Chicago next March. And it's going to be sponsored by the Women's Philanthropic Institute at the Center of Philanthropy. So WPI, another great site. Lots of things happening out there.
Oh, it sounds like it. I'm beginning to think that I better put something up on the NABBW website that lists all of these. I'll get it from you, and we'll post it. So for anyone who's listening, they can, if they haven't been able to write fast enough to get all of these, we'll get them down so they can investigate them.
Excellent. Some terrific new books that are coming out, too, in this area. And I just, you know, there's always a time. What is that? There's a time for everything, you know, from the Bible.
Right.
And this just this is the decade for women. This, you hear it and you see it. And maybe it's because we're the first generation that not only earned our money, but we inherited it. We married it. And we're going to have a way to give it away that we see fit that's going to be for a better world.
All right. Now, would this be because you're saying this is a decade for this? Would that be your inspiration or what your motivation for writing your book, Women, Wealth, and Giving, or was there more to it than that?
Well, there was a lot more to it than that, which probably some of it's very personable. Something about 4 years ago, I had an epiphany that I realized, if not me, who? And I think that I went through that postmenopausal zest and Carl Jung, and I realized many things that had happened in my life were because of who helped me and mentored me along the way. And I thought, you know, I'm never sure when that last day is going to be. My mom lived to 95. My grandmother's 94. But if there's something I feel that is passionate that I want to do, and I that's why I sold my financial planning business, is when I started to think strongly about what is it that I could do. We all have something. We all have a special talent. We're all put here for a purpose. This may not be my whole purpose, but I believe it is my purpose to inspire others and to be, as much as I can, a mentor for the next generation, Gen X and Gen Y, to believe that there will be a future for all of us, and that my dream that Eleanor Roosevelt has so talked about in her literature will be that this world will be better. I'm planting the trees for the next generation. I'm a bridge between generations, and when I started my own estate planning, I thought, well, what better thing for me to do than to walk the walk and talk the talk and inspire others also. So in my estate plan, I'll be very honest with you, and I made the provision for not only my music, because that's my love. Many people ask, how did I switch from music to where I'm
doing
now?
I was going to eventually get to that.
But you know what? Many of the things we've done in this world come from literature, come from the arts, come from culture, come from music. And I believe it's my emotional feeling and my beauty for music that has brought me to where I am looking for a harmonious world in other ways. And I still, of course, play my music. And I'm going to leave a scholarship, because that's how I got started when I was 18. I'm going to leave a scholarship for a woman in flute at Boston University in my will, because that's where it all started for me. So I'm paying it forward. You know, I read that wonderful book,
right,
that movie, Paying It Forward, giving back, and I'm having lots of joy because there's nothing better I want to do in my life right now. I call this my encore career, that I can do, write the book, inspire others, have others tell me their stories, be able to share those stories, and even be able to help the financial community become more aware of how to work with women and their finances and their legacy and their values. Because what two things do we really have? We have our health and our wealth. And as long as we're healthy, we can do our passion and our purpose and be empowered. But we also need to be more knowledgeable and in financial literacy for women of our age. Even CEOs that I talk to sometimes say, hey, I left my money management to someone, and I'm really not sure what I have or what I'm doing. So it's not just for those of us. It's everyone has concerns about the finances. We all remember, a lot of us thought we were going to be bag ladies. I mean, there's still that fear in there somewhere. But I find that the more we give away, the more we get. And so that energy that we have of our money, our time, our talent, we're stewards, as I said earlier. It's going through, and we're for something for humanity that we can leave. We're all bridges. We've all planted the seeds for the next generation. Someone planted them for us, and we're sitting under those shade trees, as that wonderful proverb says.
Right. Well, that's the theory of abundance there that you're talking about, you know, that the more you give away, the more that you get. And certainly I'm a great believer in the concept of abundance. Now, there's one other thing. You mentioned Tracy Gehry earlier, and Tracy wrote the foreword for your book, and there's a part that I highlighted in the foreword where Tracy says that the book, Women, Wealth, and Giving, is about the transformation, influence, and leadership of women, and then the part that I highlighted is it is also about their resourcefulness and their multiple forms of capital, courage capital, influence capital, financial capital, and social capital, as they are moved intentionally to make personal and community change. So since we've talked about that we can leave a legacy in more than just a financial way, you know, I think that you're talking here about that other capital that we can participate with, our influence capital, our social capital, and certainly it takes the courage capital to make the moves to do those. So I'm sure that you have more to say about that, those other capitals.
Oh, yes. In fact, the intellectual capital, social capital, but also the emotional capital of leadership. I know there was a lot of work done recently about emotional intelligence and how that women have, and we're looking at this in the holistic community we're living in now, that the left brain and the right brain are connecting more in crosstalk. And women seem to, this has been now proven scientifically, and I forgot the name of the woman who's just written a wonderful book about the woman's brain, that through our emotional intelligence or our emotional capital, we have the ability to build better relationships and to be more consensus builders in leadership style. So that's one of the other ways that Tracy has been talking about and that I have been researching is how women use their emotional intelligence to have consensus building leadership versus hierarchical type leadership. And that seems to be a new movement in the whole theory of connecting the heart and connecting the mind and connecting the hand. The technology age that we just came through left behind education of the heart. And so now, as we come forward, we're more inclined to educate the heart, use our intellectual capital, use our social capital of building communities, coming back to communities of like-minded people. There's some work that is being done. Of course, financial capital is there, human capital, our ability of our time and our talent, so that we have all of these areas that once we put them together, the impact, and there are a number of new organizations called Impact 100s around the country of women coming together, each giving $1,000 so that there are 100 women or more in those groups. That's $100,000 a year. They then go out into the community and determine where the best impact would be based on certain parameters for those grants. They give that money that year, and then next year they raise another $100,000 or more. And so that their women are joining together using their financial capital, their intellectual capital, their social capital, their emotional capital, and all of those to bring, again, more of the community needs and to do impact grants, Impact 100. There was a wonderful story, maybe 8 years ago in People magazine about Wendy Steele, who started the Impact 100s around the country. So all of that capital is joining together. The whole is greater than the parts.
Excellent. I'm glad I asked you about that. Now, let's see. Earlier, you talked about your seven covenants of the virtuous philanthropist, and I know that you had told me that everyone on the call would be getting a gift from you. One of them is this seven covenants. So I hadn't thought to ask you in advance how they're going to get them. Can we discuss that now, or should we put that
sure.
on the website later?
How would you feel if we have an email, or if they would want to write in, or write to my website directly, whichever is more convenient for them to do, to either send something to you at the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, or to just email directly, and I will give them my personal email. So it'll come directly to me, and we have a beautifully, it's with a red heart, and it's suitable for framing, suitable to put up somewhere so that you can look at it and be reminded about it. Just email directly to me at mmdamen, D-A-M-E-N, at earthlink.net. If that's agreeable with you, Ann, I'll be more than happy to just have those emails come directly to me.
There's no reason for me to be the potential bottleneck between them. So let's have them go directly to you. I like that idea.
And so
not that I want to be a bottleneck, but
at Earthlink.
Say that again. So
Margaret May. So mmdamen, D-A-M-E-N, at earthlink.net. And in addition to that, we have the 10 steps for living those three principles of abundance. And I think we there's also two other items. We have this adorable lapel little heart. It's gold with a little burgundy on it that they can wear to demonstrate that they're educating the heart of others, and they're showing their heart in their passion and their purpose and their power. So if they wanted me to send them that, that's also available. And we also had a memorable dates calendar, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. That
You sent me one of those. It's a very nice calendar.
Yeah, don't you find it so useful that each month you can list the names of those people you want to remember, birthdays, anniversaries, just something special, and you can flip it over year to year, month to month, and always there's a little saying at the top of each page. I have to tell you this, don't tell everyone this, but since we are on a line, I guess everyone will know, I hang mine up in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And it's right there on my mirror, so I look at it and I can see who is whose birthday or who I want to remember.
Coming up that you want to remember. Yes, it's a lovely shape of a calendar and very nicely done. So an excellent additional.
Those are all available
there.
to our members, and also if we see fit, maybe at some point we post these on the website.
All right.
Your website.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, I know we're getting short of time to the point where I need to open up the call for our listeners to ask questions, but I want to ask one more question that I think probably might be in the back of some people's mind because, you know, when we talk to our financial planners, they're one of the things they're always talking about, and you mentioned, you know, Uncle Sam keeping our money away from being taxed and taken away by the government. So I believe that you would feel that I was remiss if I didn't ask you to talk about the tax benefits that come from giving. Not that I'm saying that's why we should give, but it is an additional benefit.
Well, and rightfully so that you bring it up, especially in this year, because that's exactly what Congress is going to be looking at, because all of the tax benefits for many of our estate planning and bequest areas on are sunsetting from the last 10 years through the Bush administration, and it's going to be one of the topics that comes up for midterm election. And I think that all of us as women responsible in our community need to be educated on what the tax laws are, what's going to sunset, whether it's capital gains, whether it's on the estate planning side, and how we can impact our local legislators on this issue, because it's a big one. You bring it up at the right time. The fact that, yes, each one of us, if we itemize on our tax return, do have a opportunity to have a deduction, a charitable gift deduction for gifts we give, and that's one of the reasons that when you're looking at organizations that you make sure you get your receipt for gifts that you give, cash gifts especially. If many of our business owners, a lot of Boom Generation women are at a point where they may want to sell their business, there are numerous tax benefits to talking to a good attorney and financial planner and CPA about opportunities, these alphabet soup of a charitable remainder trust that one could put their business in to sell and avoid capital gains and also get an income during life. I'm being very simplistic. I'm not giving tax advice, but there are a significant number of ways that women can use the tax code and also talk with their attorneys and their financial planner to benefit them and benefit charity. It's a win-win situation, even to the point that charitable gift annuities that so many of the organizations, that's a whole other topic we could use, charitable gift annuities where if we give cash to certain organizations based on our age, we will get a lifetime income. And then the residual of that a cash gift at our death will go to benefit the organization that we have the contract with, the charitable gift annuity with. So that there's lots of tax benefits for those, and I see that in most cases the tax benefits don't drive the contribution, but it certainly helps both the organization and the donor to know about them and not be surprised. Again, it's education, financial literacy, and the ability to use what I think it was Justice Berger, I'm not sure, I might have the wrong Supreme Court justice, but he said there's nothing wrong in using all the tax laws to our benefit, because some people believe that could be a little bit on the dark side, but they're there for us to use.
You might as well use them.
But there's a lot of changes next year, so let's all get on the bandwagon and talk to our congressmen and our senators about this. Big tax year for benefits and charitable giving.
Excellent. Good.
In fact,
my mother was talking to me about it the other day, so I'm glad I brought it up.
Let me give one site that would be good for this. It's called www.pppnet.org, and it's a partnership for philanthropic planning.org. www.pppnet.org. They are up on all the legislative affairs.
Okay.
Consumers.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to open the lines now so that all of our guests have a chance to talk. I don't think you have to press anything on your phone, because I believe I've got everybody open here. So I will stop talking here for a second, and hopefully one of our we'll have some questions for you. Okay. Guess people are being shy. You've mentioned, let me jump in here again, because I don't like to have quiet air too long, and I'll give people one more question from me, and we'll again, remind people that the line is open. You've mentioned a number of women philanthropists, but I'm curious if you have any that are truly exemplary women that you think that their stories that you'd like to share with us about things that they've done.
Well, every single woman I've met is exemplary because they're all unique. But let me tell you about one of the women in the book, Beverly Holmes, who is now retired from MassMutual. But when I spoke with Beverly, she had told me that when she was a youngster, she'd seen that were so many women and girls that were not having opportunities that she had, that when she went to college, she was going to major in not-for-profit management and go into working in the public sector. But she realized that she could not give back unless she actually made a career that she could have something to give back with, including mm-hmm. financial assets. So she went to work for MassMutual for many years and just retired and has just now started a scholarship for young girls, but put aside her dream of working in the not-for-profit and help women early in her life in order to realize that she could develop those assets so when she retired she could help women. So that's one area where that dream stayed with her, and she found a way to go and do it and have it and achieve it later on in life, and that she's up in Massachusetts, a wonderful woman. Another story that recently came to my attention was a woman by the name of Carolyn Eichner, who is in Augusta, Georgia, and she had an opportunity to go with her daughter, so she was sharing values on a trip to Ecuador to a church mission with 10,000 pairs of glasses from the Lions Club. And she came back saying, you know, part of being a philanthropist is just seeing the smile on an older gentleman's face and a hug when he could see better than he has seen in 50 years, even though the prescription wasn't perfect. And she and her daughter were living in a village for a week with cold water and, you know, those things that all those amenities that we take for granted here in the country.
Right.
So there are many stories like that that are inspiring to other women. Yes, there's the Darla Moores who gave $70 million to put their name on a building for a business center in University of South Carolina who's doing wonderful work. Yes, there's Meg Whitman who gave $30 million who's now running for governor in California to Princeton. But there's these stories that we can share of regular people doing regular things that make a difference every single day.
Excellent. Now, one woman that we haven't mentioned at all, but I think is also someone that people might think of when they think of women philanthropy, is Oprah.
Yes, and she set a great example for all of us with her school in Africa and her show that brings to the attention that what we can give and how much she has given of what she has and has shared, and I think that The more stories like that will be coming out in the next 5 to 10 years, because there are going to be more women that have achieved, broken through the glass ceiling, and have achieved mm-hmm. that want to give back. So Helen Hunt and Swanee Hunt are two wonderful women in New York who spearheaded, along with Tracy Gehry, the Fund for Women's Funding Network. And they're just so many, it's hard to single them out. But they're all doing something a little bit different, but they're all making a big, big, big difference.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to try being quiet again. So anybody out there that would like to ask Margaret a question, please go ahead and jump in there.
Or even make a statement of something that you know about that we'd like to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
I know one that was asked to me just recently was about who should I talk to if I just received a small inheritance?
Mm-hmm.
How do I find out about the stability of the organization I want to give my money to? And that's one that comes up quite often. And let me just say GuideStar is one of or Charity Navigator are two of the sites to go to look at the stability of an organization. But more importantly, just go visit them and ask questions. Ask mm-hmm. questions of the CEO. Ask to see what's a Form 990. That will tell you everything you want to know about that organization. And there is a donor bill of rights, so that and there's transparency, so that I think the more due diligence we do as donors, the better the entire profession of philanthropy will be and our communities. So don't ask questions and get the answers up front. That's a lot that I see happening, and I tell women to use the acronym REAL, R-E-A-L. You know, does it resonate with who I am? You know, does it hit my emotion? Does it help me take action? And will it in some way connect my values with my valuables so I leave my legacy? So think of the word REAL when you're out there, when you can't think of any other way to ask questions of how an organization is will use your money and will your
that's
time
excellent.
And your talent.
Now, I had been going to ask you how to choose an organization when giving, but I think you just answered that. Is there anything else that we should know when we're trying to choose an organization for giving?
Those are probably you want to know the truth. Use your
mm-hmm.
gut. If it doesn't
okay.
feel right, and if they don't answer the questions, and they are, and there's not transparency, and they don't respect the talents and the time or the money that you bring, then I would say, as passionate as you may be about that issue, find another
mm-hmm.
organization that respects who you are and what you can do. Go back to those seven covenants and see if the organization is living the seven covenants of courage, of temperance, of prudence, of justice, and faith, hope, and love.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to ask you, Margaret, is there anything else that I haven't asked you that I should have? Anything else you'd like to bring up?
I would just like to say, Anne, that thank you for this great opportunity to, again, talk about how all of us as women are unique and all of us have something to give, and that there are so many ways to do that and so many ways to make a difference in this world, and that just to give ourselves permission to be able to think outside the box. And to realize that each day when we wake up in the morning, there's something we can do in somebody that we can bring a smile to their face and some joy to their heart, including our own heart. Let's not think that this is all altruistic. De Tocqueville said that self-interest, rightly understood, is the American way. And so we get joy from our giving, and that I'd just like to leave that message with every single woman that's on our line tonight.
Excellent. Well, Margaret, it's been great talking to you, and I thank you for being my guest and for the great discussion. And especially I want to remind people that your book is Women, Wealth, and Giving, The Virtuous Legacy of the Boom Generation, and it is available online at Amazon.com, and I assume it's in most bookstores around the country.
Yes, it is, and on Kindle and the Nook.
All right. Kindle is wonderful. And then I want to remind them also of your web address. You mentioned the www.instituteforwomenandwealth.org.
All spelled out.
Properly. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I just want to tell you that we're indebted to you for the wisdom that you've shared and telling us about how we can express our philanthropic voices and our values and how we can go about doing this in order to achieve the maximum result, which, of course, is what we all want to do because, you know, that means that our philanthropic efforts go as far as they possibly can. So that is wonderful information that you've given us today, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Margaret, and thanks everyone else for joining us. And I'm going to say goodbye now.
My pleasure. Thank you, Anne, for everything you're doing.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.